In this segment, number four, we're going to pull together Roman and Greek and Jewish women and to make a cultural blend. And let's talk about some more of the issues that we were talking about before. First of all, and I've made this point before, the Jewish women were part of this whole world. They don't operate in a vacuum. It would be a mistake to think about Jews as living separately from their Greek and Roman neighbors. We do think that in most of these major cities, cultural groups tended to live together, as they still do today in many places. And so you would have a neighborhood that might be predominantly Syrian, a neighborhood in Rome, let's say. Another neighborhood that would be predominantly people from Egypt, and another that would be predominantly Jewish. But they're all living as part of a large cultural blend. And so Jewish women are part of this. I mentioned Elefantine, that's that island near Aswan in Upper Egypt. We have some information from that place about the Jewish community. For one thing, they had a temple. The temple was not limited to Jerusalem, and we think that this one actually was built at the time when the Jerusalem temple, the first temple, was destroyed in the late 6th century and BC. And the this community at Elefantine left some literary documents referring to their temple there. But one of the interesting things with regard to women is that it had been thought that according to Jewish law, women could not initiate divorce. There is nothing in the legislation in the Old Testament that would suggest that they could. That men could decide, married men could decide they were going to divorce their wives, and how do they do it? By giving an appropriate piece of a document, appropriate legislation. And so we sort of thought that Jewish women couldn't initiate divorce on their own. Now, in fact, what we do know just about everywhere is that a Jewish woman who wanted a divorce could go to the leaders of the synagogue and ask them to intervene and to issue the divorce, and that would happen. But at this place in Elefantine, Jewish women are initiating divorce. And so it's one of these things that makes us ask the question, okay, you have a written text that says something, but what's really going on? And so that could be the case really all over in the Jewish communities of the empire. Urban and rural differences. Here, we could perhaps look at something like Galilee, a place like Galilee, or other places that are more rural than urban, and ask whether society was not more conservative, shall we call it, or traditional there than in places like Alexandria or Rome or Ephesus or some of the cities of the empire. And that's quite possible that in some of the rural areas, and if you're talking about Jewish women in the home country, you know, in Galilee or even in the countryside in Judea, that people who were not quite as under the influence of the larger Roman culture would live more traditionally. And we'll talk more about that when we get to women in the Gospels, but that is certainly a question to ask. But the trouble is always we have very little evidence from rural places. We have very little evidence from illiterate people, you know? So that is always a problem. I do, though, want to talk about levels of literacy. And that's something that's very debated. There are scholars who will say that in the entire Roman Empire, that literacy never goes above about 30%. We know that there were teachers, there were men who made a living being teachers, and they would send boys to school. We know that from literary texts. We have even some of the copybooks that boys had to use to learn handwriting, and some of them describe exactly what they have to do. They have to get up in the morning and they eat their breakfast and they go to school and they do their lessons and they come back and do their homework, and the whole description of what a boy's life is like while he's going to school. And so certainly there were parts of the population that were literate. Now what about women? Very sparse evidence of women doing something like that, going to school as girls. However, in households that could afford it, there certainly were instances in which women were tutored and became literate also as children. In very upper class, wealthy, elite households, they definitely were educated and highly educated in literature. Some of the Roman satirists will complain that they go to a dinner party and the women are spouting literature and wanting to talk about all kinds of aspects of literary interpretation. And so we know that there certainly were some women who were highly educated, but there we're talking about a small number, and we're talking about elites. Did the average woman on the street who's selling her vegetables know how to write? Maybe not. Did she know how to count enough to get her money? You bet she did. So when we talk about literacy, there are all kinds of levels. And a basic level is just getting along to do what you need to do. And there are different levels. I mean, there's reading and then there's writing, which are not the same thing. Some people could read and probably not write. But it goes all the way up into a very highly educated level as well. So the question of literacy is an interesting one. And another thing that kind of throws confusion into this is the evidence from the city of Pompeii. Pompeii was a city on the Bay of Naples, south of Rome, that was destroyed by the eruption of Vesuvius, probably in August of the year 79, though there's some evidence it could have been in October instead of August, but the year 79. And there are a number of towns there that were destroyed and by the volcano and were rediscovered in the beginning in the late 1600s, 1700s, and excavations going on various times through the centuries and still excavations going on now. But here's the thing about literacy. All over the walls of the buildings along the street, there are election campaign signs. Vote for so-and-so. So-and-so and so-and-so advocate this candidate. Vote for this candidate. Written on the walls. If only 30% could read those, why put them out there? It raises the question of a higher level of literacy for basic things like that, just reading sentences, and these sentences are, there's a formula. I mean, they're very repetitive in the way they say things. But having, spending the time and money, you know, to have your candidate plastered on the wall sounds as if there's a higher level of literacy. And women, of course, did not vote, so maybe that doesn't say anything about literacy for women, but it certainly does for men. So this whole question of levels of literacy is something that's very debated. So the point is that this first generation of Christian women are part of all of this. The first generation of people in the church are, some of them are Jews, certainly are. That's the matrix, that's the beginning matrix. Paul's pattern, according to Acts, this is at least the way it's described in Acts, and that Paul and his traveling companions, other itinerant missionaries, they're Jewish. They seek out the Jewish neighborhood in a city where they arrive, and they're visiting scholars, visiting people who seem to have something to say. And so when they go to the synagogue on the Sabbath, they're invited to say something, and they do. And they start from the scriptures and distinct passages in scripture. And they couldn't have carried Bibles with them because Bibles were, you know, huge things and very expensive. But they must have carried with them certain passages that they wanted to use, a little collection of passages. Isaiah, the suffering servant, is one of the favorites, certainly. And you get this in the preaching in Acts. What are the scripture texts they start out with? And from there, then they would preach Jesus. And they would get various reactions. Some people would say, we don't want to hear any more about this, goodbye. And others would say, yeah, we do want to hear more about this. Come to our house for dinner tonight. And a group of people would gather, and this, of course, is the origin of the house churches, and we'll say more about that later. Now, how are women involved in this? Are women in the synagogue? This is one of the questions. If you look at Luke 13, and Jesus healing the bent-over woman in the synagogue, he sees this woman in the synagogue on the Sabbath. And so, you know, are the men and the women all mixed in together? Or is there a women's gallery as there is today in traditional synagogues, a different place for women, but visible from the men? This is kind of a question, and the presence of women in synagogues, in ancient synagogues, is a very interesting topic, and we don't know completely how that worked. But certainly women are part of this whole thing. They're hearing what these people are saying, and they're part of the households in which then they begin to meet. So women are very much part of this whole way in which Greco-Roman culture worked, and in which the gospel was first preached, and we're going to have a lot more to say about that.